Hello, you're very welcome to Out and Proud. This week, we're looking at minding yourself. That's things like staying on top of your sexual health, supporting your mental well-being, and also how small changes in the health service could make a big difference for the queer community. So with me in studio is Dr. John Gilmore, Assistant Professor in the UCD School of Nursing, Midwifery and Health Systems. We also have CEO of LGBT Ireland, Paula Fagan. You're both very welcome. And joining us on the line from Waterford is Anita Furlong, who's counsellor, psychotherapist and supervisor specialising in working with gender and sexual diversity. Also, later in the programme, if you're a wee bit nervous about having an STI test, I take my public service broadcasting remit very seriously here in this programme. So I have done a test, I've recorded it, and I'll prove it really is absolutely nothing to worry about whatsoever. First, though, John, health obviously is really important and it's an important part of everybody's life. But there are some additional challenges for members of the LGBTQ plus community, which is actually something you're researching at the moment. What are those extra challenges?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on to speak about this. I think it's just really important, as you said, for all of us to be conscious and cognizant of staying well, staying healthy, being able to do the things we want to do and need to do. And I think for lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, intersex, or whatever sexuality or gender diversity people have, there can be extra challenges in terms of, I suppose, first of all, barriers in talking about the specific needs. And while we've come a long way in Ireland, and we definitely have in terms of social attitudes, in terms of legislative progression, there is still a long way to go in terms of, you know, acknowledging that people have different experiences of the world, of life, and being able to talk about that. So we still see, like the Fundamental Rights Agency of the EU do a study on LGBTI rights periodically. So they've done two now, 2013 and I think a 2019 survey. And there's still a significant amount of people from the sexual and gender minority communities or LGBTQI plus communities who don't come out to any healthcare provider. They don't tell any doctor or nurse they meet that they happen to be LGBT, LGBTQI+.
Would they be out to their friends, but not then to the medical profession?
So some would and some wouldn't. So some would have various levels of outness, I suppose, and depending on the different communities as well. So gay men versus bisexual people versus lesbians, all of different levels. But there are still significant proportions, like a quarter of Irish gay men don't come out to any healthcare provider. And one might say, well, that's OK, that's private information, it's personal information, and absolutely nobody should feel compelled that they have to come out. But because there are specific health inequities and inequalities and differences in kind of needs for those communities, it's really important that we create health services that encourage people and are open to people coming out. So we know a little bit, and I always say we just know the tip of the iceberg when it comes to those health inequalities. Because we've learned a lot around, particularly around sexual health and HIV amongst gay men and some members of our trans communities. We know quite a bit around mental health now and some really good research in Ireland more recently from colleagues in Trinity College Dublin have come out around that. I mean, really good research, very harrowing findings around health inequalities. But there's lots we don't know because we never ask the question. So we don't know a lot around cancer inequalities, whether gay men or bisexual, non-binary people are more likely to have certain types of cancers because we don't ask about sexual orientation, gender identity. We don't ask that when, you know, I'm a nurse, you know, in my practice, and I continue to do a little bit of clinical practice, and I probably do ask about it because I'm a bit obsessive. But in standard practice, we often don't ask patients when they come into clinics or they come into a hospital about their sexual orientation and identity. So that's invisible to the healthcare practitioner. It's also invisible to the researchers. So there's a lot of work to do in terms of finding out what LGBTQ plus health is and what it means. So my work kind of is in the space. I do a little bit of work around health outcomes and that kind of work, but really in the space of healthcare provision and how healthcare organisations, how healthcare providers can provide a better service to sexual and gender minorities. We often think of a patient as just this blank canvas and we treat everyone the same, people say, but then you don't really treat them very well because everybody has different needs. So we're trying to develop some kind of competencies and some standards around what the important things are for healthcare providers to be aware of. without stereotyping LGBTQ plus people, because that can happen too. But at the same time, trying to build an awareness and a competency. And from there, then build specialist services, because actually there are specific needs that different groups within our communities have around health and well-being. And in Ireland, we have very limited specialist healthcare services for a lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, trans or intersex people.
So I presume that's kind of where we need to get to then. That's the holy grail.
When we think about specialist services, some people balk a bit and think that's segregation and siloing. And that is a challenge. We don't want all the gays having to go to the gay doctor. That's not the place we want to be.
That'd be a good place to go.
Yeah, absolutely. But for some people, the barrier is that I'm going to go into a healthcare provider who is not going to understand my needs. And actually, by having specialist health services, you automatically create a space where somebody's needs are going to be met, hopefully, that at least at a very baseline, that their identity is going to be acknowledged and affirmed. So there is a real space for that. I spent 6 months last year in the United States of America, in San Francisco on Ohlone Ramatush land, and a month in New York on Lenape land, looking at different models of LGBTQ plus healthcare, particularly in primary care. So GPs and nurse practitioners working in the community, and their full-time job was to provide care for lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer and intersex people. They didn't do really anything different than your local GP would do. But what they did is they did it in a way which was acknowledging the lived experiences and the specific needs of those groups. So we have that area which we could really develop in Ireland in terms of specialist services and specialist primary care services in particular. But at the same time, then we need to work a lot on our mainstream services within both the community and acute setting.
And then the openness will come naturally in between the patient and the professional.
Absolutely. If people feel affirmed, people feel seen, then they're going to open up. And I offend people every day. Oh, that's part of my career, I think, sometimes. But we do in clinical practice. We often say things or ask questions that people find difficult. And what do? We apologise, we learn and we move on. And that's a lot of the work I do, is trying to create just spaces where this is just having normal conversations, creating spaces where people can talk, which is the basis of my profession as a nurse, but also the other healthcare providers as well.
It's a really interesting area as well. So thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today. And you're going to stay with us here in studio as well. In a few minutes, we're going to chat as well to psychotherapist, counsellor and a supervisor specialising in gender and sexual diversity, Anita Furlong, and obviously as well, Paula Fagan, who's here in studio, who's the CEO of LGBT Ireland. First, though, I should do a little kind of drum roll nearly for this bit. Sexual health is a massive part of all our lives. But surprisingly, there is, as we've been talking about, still a stigma around it as well. So to dispel that stigma, I went along to St. Vincent's Hospital, to their prevention support clinic, to take an STI test and to chat to advanced nurse practitioner Siobhan O'Dea whilst I was getting it done. So Siobhan, what exactly am I looking at here?
So the first thing here I have is a blood form. I'm going to send you off to phlebotomy. So we have somebody here who does all our bloods for us in clinic. And they're going to take bloods, and those bloods are going to be taken for HIV, hepatitis A, B and C, and syphilis. And then we're also going to do swabs and a urine for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And I'm going to talk you through those now.
So I have what looks like just like a basic little foil tray and a little cup in it.
You have a little foil tray and you have a little pot in it, and you're going to pee in this jar. So the first lot of pee that comes out, that's going to be the most concentrated, and that's if there is an infection there, we want to pick it up. So the first lot of pee that comes out, when you go into the loo, we're going to ask you to half fill this. So okay, that's the pee jar. Then we have this swab here for your throat. Just going to open it. You can do these swabs yourself, and they are beyond easy to do. So you have the swab. When you're going to put it into your mouth. So the easiest way to do this, so you don't either puke or choke yourself or gag, is to open your mouth, look in the mirror and just go, ah, because it makes it easier. So you just say, ah, as if like you're in the dentist. And then you just want to catch both sides and the back of your throat. It's a big, long cotton bud, and you just want to touch it very gently. You don't need to ram it back your throat. So that's that. So now this is the throat one. Both jars are going to be clearly marked. One will say throat and the other one will say rectal. I'll explain that in a second. So when you've taken the throat swab out of your mouth, you're going to open this little jar. There's liquid in the bottom of it, and you don't want to spill it because it's the liquid they analyse. You pop your cotton tip swab in, and it snaps off like that, and then you close it tight. Your swab is inside, and that's what you give us, and that's what we send to the lab. Then the other one is a rectal swab. if you have anal sex. So you want to do this. Also, if you have any kind of anal stimulation, you don't have to have penetrative sex to pick up an anal STI. So, for example, oral anal, as in rimming, or fingering or spooning, or also sharing sex toys. That's another way of picking up an STI.
Can it also be, so it's just as basic as could be skin-on-skin contact could cause something?
Technically, yeah, and HPV, or the human papillomavirus, is passed on by skin-to-skin contact. You don't need to have penetrative sex with somebody to pick that up.
Now, you're going to give me this little tube. It was easy enough with the throat option. Yeah. This one's probably
a little bit more particular. This one is even easier. I think it's just sometimes we're a little bit more apprehensive maybe about sticking things into places that we only think certain things should go into. So here we go. So this swab we have marked rectal. So you're going to pop this swab into your bum to the end of the cotton wool, which isn't very far. You don't need to, just need to put it in very gently. Twirl it around very gently like that, because if there is an infection there, it's going to pick it up. Take it back out. Again, you open your little container. You pop it into the container like that, and it snaps off again. And then you close it tight. Make sure you don't spill the liquid. And again, that's what you give us, and that's what we send to the lab. The reason we have them marked separately is that we will know where the site of the infection is, whether it's in your penis, which we'll pick up from the urine. We don't, by the way, stick swabs into anybody's penis, so there is no need to worry about that.
That was one of the things when I told a colleague I was coming here today. The first thing he said to me was that exact thing. Do they stick it where I think they stick? I said, I don't think they do anymore.
No, that hasn't been done for quite a while. There is no need to do that. Those are the swabs that we do for if, depending on the type of sex that you have. If you're a female and you have vaginal sex, then we will obviously give you the same type of swab as I gave you for the rectal swab, and that you just pop that into the vagina. It's that simple. So it's just depending on what you do, what your practices are, that's where we'll do the testing. To take these swabs is really simple. It's not painful. It is far less painful than doing a COVID swab, which was fairly horrendous, in my opinion, speaking as a nurse, and quite painful at times, sticking these swabs up your nose. So this is the very same. You just put the swabs in different areas, but they're a lot more pleasant. So you go into a cubicle, into the toilet, you lock the door. There is no problem. You're there on your own, and you take the swabs in your own time. And there's no fear that anybody's going to walk in on top of you. The only time really that you need an examination is if you're symptomatic. If you're not symptomatic and you're not worried about something, then there's no need for an examination. You can do the swabs yourself. Just to note though, Trevor, there are people who don't feel confident in their own ability to take the tests. There's no reason for that, but sometimes people just do. And if they prefer, we will always take the tests for them, and we'll offer them a chaperone if they want to have two people in the room, so they're not in the room on their own with one provider.
Right then. I better take my little baking foil tray and off I pop. See you in a minute.
Excellent.
Actually, it wasn't too bad. Like you said, it's not painful. It is less painful than the COVID test, for sure.
Absolutely. It's much less painful. Most important thing to say is the message that we've already talked about, to remember if there is ever an infection when somebody does an STI screen, all infections are treatable and most infections are curable.
So what happens now? If I am clear, how will you notify me? Or if I have an infection of some sort, will you ring me or text?
Yeah, so if your results are all clear, we'll text you and let you know if you need another appointment or when it is, or if you need vaccines or whatever. And if there is anything positive, if a bacterial infection does come back positive, we'll phone you and organise for you to come in within the next day or two and give you treatment.
So there should be no stigma around this?
No, absolutely not. And another thing we do, which is a big thing for us, and all STI clinics do it, is partner notification. So that if you have a regular sexual partner, we'll do partner notification for you, or we'll bring them in and treat them here as well, so that there isn't the possibility of reinfection and transmission.
Siobhan, lastly, if anybody's listening and they're not too sure about getting an STI test, what would you say to them?
I would say to them, please, please don't Google. Don't order medication online. Don't try and diagnose yourself online either. Don't ask a friend or phone a friend. I would say, please, if you're concerned and you feel you've had a risk, either if you've no symptoms, you can do the SH24 at home kit, or you could come to an STI clinic and get screened. And if you do have something, you'll get treated there. there is no need to worry about this. It's much more simple now, as you've seen, and much easier to do. And staff in STI clinics are so friendly, so they would want to put you at ease, and that's exactly what they try to do.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Text me.
Thank you. I will.
Just to say as well, that home testing website, which Siobhan mentioned, is sh24.ie. Now, stigma is something that has come up already a few times in this episode, and it certainly contributes to poor mental health within the community. Paula Fagan is CEO of LGBT Ireland and is here with us as well. Paula, one of the services that your organisation operates is a national helpline. What are the topics that you're hearing about most?
Thanks a million, Trevor, for having me on. And I think, firstly to say, I think we're probably an example of what John was talking about, is as in a specialist service. I'm saying that because I think people ring us because they know that the volunteer that answers the phone will have a lived experience, you know, of what they need to talk about. They won't be judged, they'll be accepted, and they'll be celebrated. So they know all that even before they pick up the phone. And I think that's important to say. And I think it speaks to John's point about the specialist service. So last year in 2023, so the top reasons why people phoned our helpline was, firstly, was for information. Top of the list was about social supports in their area. So a lot of people still, unfortunately, don't have an LGBTQI plus organisation or a support group in their local area, in their local village, in their local town. So they're ringing us to see, well, where can they go? Where can they meet other people? So that was top of the list. The second thing then, which Anita will be talking more about, is people were looking for LGBTQI plus friendly therapists and counsellors. So that's very high up on the list of why people contact us. They're experiencing mental health difficulties. They're not feeling great in themselves. But they're reluctant to, as John has already said, go to health professionals. They're worried they may be discriminated against. They won't understand them. They won't accept them. So they're looking to us to if we can recommend somebody to talk to. And then obviously the top reason why people will phone us after that then is around coming out. And I can see you raising your eyebrows.
I'm just thinking, should I be surprised by that still? I probably shouldn't be.
It is surprising to people. It's even surprising to people themselves, I think, and particularly parents that phone us. They say, I didn't realise I've loads of gay friends. I didn't realise I'd be afraid when my child came out, or I didn't realise that I'd actually be upset. Because what they're picking up then is actually the stigma that still exists. So you don't feel it and you don't see it until it's closer to you. And I think as members of the LGBTQ+ community, we know that. We may have forgotten it, though. I suppose the more out you are and the more secure you are in your life, you do forget that. A lot of people still really have internalised stigma themselves, so they need to talk that out and they need it to be normalised. And that's a process, and that can take one call, it can take many calls. And we also have peer support groups that we can link people into, which is a great way for people to break that cycle and to start to normalise themselves, because they still think in this day and age they're the only person, or they just can't get over this barrier that they have within themselves. And then obviously the second reason then is the external stigma that still exists in society. Unfortunately, you know, still people get bad reactions in families. They get bad reactions in their wider family, in their schools, in their workplaces, and so on. So
I suppose some people would say that as well, when the marriage equality referendum happened, that was like a high point of acceptance in Ireland.
Well, I was very involved in the marriage equality campaign from the very beginning. And what I think the marriage equality campaign did over 10 years, I'm talking from when it started in 2006, over time, people began to speak more openly, to talk about the stigma, the fear, the silence, the hiding. And of course, that strikes the heart and mind, doesn't it? Then people were like, oh, I don't want you to be experiencing this. So that was great. So I think there was a great, in a sense, the conversation and a little bit of a moment. And that was really positive and remained really positive for a number of years. And I think, you know, by and large, in Ireland, there is great support. There is increasing acceptance, increasing visibility, more, I would say, for lesbian and gay people. Obviously, more minority sexualities and genders are suffering. So we need to now support those people to be visible and to be safe. And a journey we're still very much on. But and then on top of that, of course, we're seeing this organised backlash, if you like to call it, or organised campaign of spreading fear and hate, really trying to undermine the progress that has been made. And that's it's very purposeful. You know, they do want to stop that progress. They don't want to see minority communities accepted and safe. And so that's not just our community, it's also people from other minority communities. And we really have, it's an opportunity now for Irish people to stand up and say, no, we are an inclusive society.
And who are they?
You know, I hate giving them airtime in some ways, but I think there's a small band of people who have very far right and extreme views. They stoke fear and they stoke hate and they stoke division. And we see them. There's not many of them, but they're organising around protesting against refugees. They're organising protesting around LGBTQI plus books in libraries. So the same people. Of course, there's also global forces then that come through online and are really muddying the waters here in Ireland.
Anita Furlong is on the line as well, Paula. Anita, you're a psychotherapist and counsellor specialising in working with gender and sexual diversity. Now, is a lot of this ringing true for you as well, day to day, and what you're hearing in your work?
It absolutely is. I mean, in some respects, I think we have made great strides. We have come forward hugely, but yet the same things are showing up in the therapy room. You're looking at shame, you're looking at low self-esteem, depression, anxiety, withdrawing from life, hypervigilance, using alcohol and drugs in a harmful way. You know, and when these issues, when you relate them to the stressors that any minority experiences, it's a very relevant thing. And sometimes even explaining this to clients in the therapy room helps them understand what's going on for them. So you're looking at microaggressions, you know, things that people tell themselves that they shouldn't be bothered by. You think they should float over your head, but actually they really take their toll. You know, you're talking about jokes that are supposedly funny, words that are used, social media, you know, religious and cultural attitudes. And I absolutely agree with Paula there that there is a concerted backlash going on at the moment. And there is, without a doubt, really, really negative messages coming from different areas.
And Anita, I'm sitting here talking to you and Paula and John, and these are tough topics. And it kind of makes me sad to think that people are still struggling with them as well. But I suppose it's really important to say, too, that you know it and I know it, and Paula and John, you know this as well. It is absolutely possible to get to a place of acceptance still. And it is a good place when you get there.
Absolutely. It is indeed. You know, you can still lead a very full and fulfilling life just because the struggle is there. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't move on and make that life for yourself. You absolutely can.
I think Anita is right. And one of the things that I do now a lot in my work is I talk a lot about the inequalities and the challenges is to talk about the great, and in my space in terms of health and well-being, the great healing potential of queer solidarity, queer joy, friendship, companionship, community. But I would kind of take a step back also to say that it gets better when the mechanisms are put in place, because it hasn't gotten better for some people. And I always think about my community as a global community, that there is regression very close to us in the United Kingdom. There is significant regression around LGBTQ plus rights. That will have an impact on health and well-being. That will have an impact on death and dying and mortality of queer people. So again, it's that vigilance, I suppose. So you know, to be aspirational and say it can and things have progressed, but just to be conscious. And also, as Paul was saying, within the migrant community, the traveller community, there's queer people there too. And it's to be mindful of people being, I'll use the word tolerant of lesbian and gay people and acknowledging marriage equality. That's one step. But also to acknowledge, you know, people who may not fit that script. That's also really important, to create those spaces for LGBTQ plus people.
We're all part of that community and have to work as well to strive to make it better as well. Anita, for anybody who's listening and who is struggling, what kind of basic practical advice would you give them?
You know, I would say, like, in as much as possible, surround yourself with caring, accepting, supportive people. You know, I call it finding your tribe. Minimize the time you spend with people who, you know, express negative views in general anyway. That's good for all of us, but especially towards you and your identity. And look after yourself, you know, look after your physical self, sleep, food, exercise, tread carefully in the digital world, especially, you know, how you look at social media, technology. It affects all of us and it affects how you feel about yourself and the world in general. And maybe look at, do you need to moderate this? Do you need to take a break? And I mean, these are basic You know, but actually, when we put them into practice, pretty powerful things. You know, things you can do yourself, like journaling, practicing gratitude, acceptance, but also learning to be assertive in your identity. It's research out there has shown that advocating for social justice, be it around, you know, gender and sexual orientation for yourself or for others, things like that can greatly improve self-esteem and self-acceptance. Mm. But if you are, you know, perhaps at that deeper end of depression, anxiety, perhaps self-harm, it is important, if you can at all, reach out to the right place. Reach out to professional help if you need it.
That's like your helpline, for instance, Paula, for a start.
Exactly, yeah. Trevor. Yeah. And I just add to Anita's point there around the microaggressions. I'd like to flip that as well and maybe speak to the allies that are listening. So I think there's also micro affirmations that can really help. I'm always struck on the helpline by one thing that somebody said, be it negative or positive, stays with the person. And it can be life changing in a good way. If allies can be affirmative and celebratory, I always am struck by, say, parents that phone, and it's not to mean anyone or anything, but they say, you know what, and the child came out to me, or the young person or whatever, and I said, I love you anyway, or I don't mind. And of course, that intention, I understand that intention as a parent, but it's also then to bring that forward and say, yeah, I'm delighted for you and thank you for telling me, and I'm just so happy that you can be yourself. Yeah. Oh, do you know, really bring that celebration piece, because actually it is, as John said, like, I mean, people can flourish and thrive when they have that that affirmation.
Anita, Paul and John, thank you so much for joining us, and to Siobhan as well from earlier in St. Vincent's Hospital. If you do need any additional supports, obviously we've been chatting to Paula about the National LGBT Helpline. That number is 1-800-929-539, and the Transgender Family Support Line is a Dublin number. It's 01907-3707. And you can, of course, find all those helplines and websites that we've discussed as well at rte.ie/support. Next time, we are going to be talking about relationships. Out and Proud was presented by me, Trevor Keegan. Sound supervision was by Tommy O'Sullivan. Production was by Jannie Lanagoin. And the series producer is Jack Murphy.